You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. In this year's homeless count and survey, more than 40% of homeless people in San Francisco reported drug and alcohol abuse. The idea of safe injection sites, where IV drug users can shoot up in safe, supervised environments, has been getting a lot of attention recently. But there's another experimental concept that's been struggling to break through for more than 5 years: housing explicitly for alcoholics, where they would be allowed to keep drinking. It's a controversial idea, but the data shows it seems to be working elsewhere. KALW's Andrew Stelzer reports some think it could make a dent in San Francisco's massive homelessness problem.
Traverse City, Michigan is a long way from San Francisco, but I wanted to see what an alcohol-friendly facility might look like, and this small town of 15,000 happens to be home to one, Dan's House. The first person I meet after walking in the door is Brian Dudley. He says finding this place saved his life.
Traverse City in the wintertime gets very, very cold. And some people die. Some homeless people die. And I was almost one of them. Probably would have fallen in one of the lakes or rivers over here and just went bloop. That's about it.
Dudley is 61 years old, and he's an alcoholic, by his own admission. But over the past year, he's reduced his drinking significantly.
Oh, I was drinking 2 12-packs a day. And half a gallon of vodka. But now, you know what I drink? Not too much. A 12-pack will freaking last me up, till tomorrow.
A 12-pack every day or two might sound like a lot, but if you do the math, that's a huge difference. So how'd he cut down so much? By living in a house full of other alcoholics.
Six people. And then we received a grant from a foundation to renovate the basement and add another bedroom.
Dan's House is an unassuming one-story home along a busy road. It houses 8 chronically homeless alcoholic men. I'm getting a tour from Karen McCarthy, who founded Dan's House back in 2014, and Ryan Hannon, Goodwill's local street outreach worker, who's here to visit a client.
So there's a couple bedrooms down here. And bathroom. Knock, knock.
Nobody be in one knock. Right now because Dougie's in the bathroom.
Okay, I don't want to go into their bedrooms without their permission.
Two beds in each room, and that's, a good thing because we can get 8 people in, but it's also a bad thing because it precludes us from qualifying for federal funding. Federal funding would require single occupancy.
The state of Michigan provided a startup grant, but now Dan's House bare-bones operating budget, just $100,000 a year, all comes from supportive individuals and foundations. Walking through the kitchen, I see a pot of chili bubbling on the stove for lunch, but that's not where the action is.
And we have this great thing called a garage.
It's kind of a man cave.
A man cave. Well, it's definitely the man cave.
I'm soon led out back past a garden with Detroit Tigers logos stenciled along the fence and into the heart of the community.
How's it going, everybody?
Good. How you doing?
Good. But we have to warn you, what goes on in the garage stays in the garage.
Oh, okay.
Telling a reporter?
Yeah.
The man cave looks a lot like a suburban teenage hangout. Old couches and easy chairs, posters on the wall. There's a bunch of guys in here drinking beer, smoking cigarettes, and marijuana. Medicinal, of course. Glenn Butler sips on a tall can of Natty Daddy malt liquor. He says back on the streets, he would have to chug his booze before the cops took it away, or he was forced to share with his friends. Not at Dan's House. The pressure to drink fast, which leads to falls and other health risks, is off.
It was a place that I could sit and, like they say, sit and have a beer and know that if I went and bought 5 or 6 and put them in my refrigerator, that I didn't have to drink all 5 or 6 of them. I could have 1 or 2. And they were good and they were safe because everybody here respects each other's stuff.
This garage illustrates the housing first philosophy. That's a growing trend amongst experts in the quest to end homelessness.
Housing first essentially does not
require that people are abstinent from any substances to attain and maintain housing.
That's University of Washington Associate Professor Susan Collins. She studied a similar facility in Seattle called 1811 Eastlake, which houses 75 chronically homeless alcoholics and allows drinking. Since its founding in 2005, it's become a national model.
This was the first Housing First effort that was focused on people with alcohol use disorders. Within the first year of operation, the Housing First model saved taxpayers about $4 million.
That savings came from fewer emergency 911 calls and trips to hospitals, shelters, and jails. And Colin says the people who live at the Seattle facility actually end up, on average, drinking less over time than when they moved in.
What the research unequivocally shows is that when we invest money in the health and well-being of our fellow citizens, everybody wins, right? So taxpayers save money, people's health improves, their substance use decreases, the problems they're experiencing decrease. They're able to retain housing and kind of, you know, become more stable parts of our community.
It's often a tough sell to neighborhood residents, so there's only a smattering of facilities like this all over the world. They're often referred to as wet housing, a controversial name that many advocates don't like. Some provide alcohol to the residents in doses. One in Canada even teaches residents how to distill hard liquor so that they don't do it wrong and end up accidentally killing themselves. So why hasn't San Francisco, where over 3,000 homeless people self-report drug and alcohol issues, gotten on board? For starters, there's still a pretty serious stigma about enabling drug and alcohol use, even amongst the homeless themselves.
Wet housing is where people can live at and drink alcohol. I don't understand that one. I don't think that's a good idea. I think because it's going to eventually cause chaos.
That's Marjorie Robinson. I meet her in downtown San Francisco, where she's in line with hundreds of others waiting to get into Project Homeless Connect, a semi-regular event where homeless or housing insecure people can access resources like healthcare, counseling, clothing, and food. And most of the people I interview are pretty skeptical about a facility allowing homeless people to drink.
No, I don't think it's good. Because first of all, I'm an alcoholic. Second of all, I know alcohol does to certain people.
I don't know. I feel like some people don't know how to handle their alcohol. So it's hard to give them the ability to have somewhere to drink.
No, I mean, who's paying for that? I mean, I'd like to sign up. If you can hook that up for me, I'll go sit in the house, get paid. Someone can pay for my housing where I can sit on my ass and drink all day. That'd be great.
Former District 8 supervisor Bevan Dufty says he used to be a skeptic too.
Even I, when I first read about it, thought, well, how in the world could you give alcoholics access to alcohol?
But the more he learned, the more it made sense to try something different.
A facility that really would have 75 to 100 individuals would definitely have an impact. You would see a change on our streets having that many people safe and housed.
Dufty directed San Francisco's Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement Initiative for almost 4 years and brought Mayor Ed Lee to visit the renowned program in Seattle, where Dufty says he didn't see people hanging out on the street at all.
You don't see the problems that even you see on some of our regular shelters where there are folks that are on the street and then there are people that are dealing to those people. It's just not like that at all.
According to San Francisco's Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, the city does have 74 designated beds for alcoholics along with specialized treatment. But they are scattered across 6 different sites around the city, and federal funding rules make it hard to qualify. Advocates like Bevan Dufty say there's a need for the community and specific support that a central location can provide. He first tried unsuccessfully to create a 50-unit alcohol-friendly facility in a San Francisco church back in 2012. The concept almost made it into city legislation in late 2016, but it just hasn't gained enough momentum, according to Sam Dodge, who recently left his post as deputy director of the city's Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing.
It's certainly not the most pressing issue that I hear from constituents and from the Board of Supervisors.
Dodge says the city's giving higher priority to establishing safe injection sites, supervised places for IV drug users to shoot up. Plus, San Francisco's subsidized housing sites already have relatively tolerant attitudes about addictive substances. Residents don't automatically lose their beds at most city-supported housing programs just because of alcohol use.
Chronic inebriates have been successful in this housing. So we haven't seen the absolute need for a sort of special carve-out program.
But the Drug Policy Alliance's Laura Thomas, who lobbies on both city and state legislation, says that's all the more reason to move ahead with easily accessible, centralized housing created specifically to support alcoholics.
San Franciscans, as a whole, still want to try new things and still have that spirit of innovation and a desire to do something about homelessness.
Thomas's group commissioned a survey in 2016, which found 64% of likely San Francisco voters support housing allowing indoor alcohol consumption. She says San Franciscans want positive, compassionate solutions, but instead, political leaders generally offer options that criminalize the homeless, like the sit-lie ban.
I think that there's a lot of support for the idea here. I think the bigger problem is actually finding a program, finding a building where this program can be situated, given the intense demand for supportive housing and for affordable housing.
Given the housing crunch, convincing neighbors to open an entire complex dedicated to alcoholics on their block could be a monumental task. So for now, the idea isn't getting much attention. Back in Traverse City, Michigan, Patrick McConnell says that's a shame.
Every town of any size should have this option.
McConnell was living on the streets for 7 years before he moved into Dan's house. Now he's taking some steps to turn his life around.
I just recently got out of a treatment center. I went to check myself into a treatment center in northern Michigan. And that was just something that I knew I had to do for myself. Now, would I have done that while I was living on the streets? Probably not.
Traverse City's mayor and police chief are now on the board of directors. The success of Dan's House and similar projects elsewhere will likely keep the idea on San Francisco's radar. I'm Andrew Stelzer for Cross Currents.